A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And I'm just going to let you know this because I had stated this to Melissa when we wrapped up our Patreon bonus yesterday about how this case is going to blow her mind. She was like, I won't even Google it, because I told her, I kind of left her hanging. I was like, this case is going to be reminiscent of a case that is near and dear to you that you bring up quite often. I know she didn't like
that. I'm intrigued. No, I'm intrigued.
Yes, I figured you would be. So I don't even know how I came across this case. Actually, I do. It was a request from Emily, and I appreciate it for the fact that it is a case that needs to be known, because it is as odd as some of the cases that are really publicized that are very similar. But I'm not so happy, Emily, because I don't have any answers. But thank you.
Okay.
So I'm going to jump right in. And I'm going to talk about Jesse Warren Ross today. Jesse was born on February 18th of 1987. Melissa, I know you'll have some questions about the dates that things are happening. It's because I won't say it until a little bit later, but I promise I'll let you know.
Okay.
Jesse grew up in Missouri with his parents. I understand that he has a brother, but I don't know if there are additional siblings. And I only know this because it was mentioned on the family's webpage for Jesse. Jesse was a good kid who had a great personality. He really had no issues with his peers. I don't see any behavioral issues that he had that came up. It sounds to me kind of like Jesse, maybe not a natural at anything. That's probably quite a deduction I've made. But he was involved in so many things, and I think that he probably was at least decent at them because he's invested in a lot of activities. Jesse was organized, and he used this skill to help his friend with his band. I know that he did a lot of publicity and stuff for them. And with his senior project when it came to raising money. So he's a responsible kid. He can balance the assortment of activities that he's doing. He can maintain good grades in school. And, he has interests, hobbies, friends. By all accounts, he's a great kid. I think his mom, somewhere in one of the articles that I read, had said something sure, Jesse was a great kid, and he made some standard poor choices that every kid makes, nothing that's a huge deal or a red flag. But I think she's trying to basically say he's a great kid. He probably engaged with a lot of what his peers were doing, but by no means was anything abnormal or out of the ordinary.
Okay.
When Jesse graduated high school, he attended the University of Missouri in Kansas City. He majored in communications, and he minored in politics. I don't know that it was his first choice for a school. I think his first choice was a little far away, actually, and his parents were we don't really love that. But Jesse adapted really well and, from my understanding, came to love where he went to school. Jesse, as a freshman, was a successful DJ. He was known as Opie Cunningham. He was good at that. And as a sophomore, he was actually promoted to a paying on-air position, to my understanding. So to me, that says, you're doing a really good job, and maybe even you're meant for this. In addition to this, Jesse was a part of Model UN. Jesse acclimated well to college, and he had a successful freshman year. By sophomore year, November brought an exciting time, which was the annual Model UN conference in Chicago. So he lives in Missouri. He attends school in Missouri. So if you can kind of guess, he's leaving the state to go to the conference.
Okay.
So it was either a 10 or a 12-hour trip. Now, it's as you guess, too expensive to fly all of these Model UN kids out. So they were able to raise money, or they had money to pay for a bus to take the trip. So Jesse had actually gone the previous year as a freshman. And I mean, there's no quote that says he loved it or enjoyed it or anything, but I think it is indicative that he liked the conference or got something out of it because he was attending again his sophomore year. So this brings us to November of 2006. Jesse's probably roughly 19 years old, a sophomore. Things are going well. He's excited to be going to this conference. It is set to start on Saturday, which was the 18th, and go until, well, everything, all of the events end on Monday. They're set to, it looks like, depart from the Chicago area on Tuesday. And I think they're going to arrive home Tuesday night, but I don't even know if it matters when they're set to arrive home. Life was good. Jesse is doing well in school. He has friends. He's connected to family. He has this radio gig that is really panning out for him. There's not a whole lot that seems to be going wrong. And I mean, I venture to say that things are going really well for him. So like I said, the conference is set to start on Saturday, November 18th of 2006. Jesse would be rooming with his friend Ralph, who he knew really well. And like I said, the kids would be bused in along with more than 1,000 students from different universities staying at neighboring hotels. So the conference is actually taking place at the Sheraton Chicago. Jesse would be staying at the Sheraton Four Points, about 15 minutes, a 15-minute walk away in downtown Chicago. Not all of the kids that are at the conference are staying at the Four Points, but there's two or three other hotels that are being used other than the conference hotel, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So the weekend generally starts out without issue. You know, they probably attended an assortment of different things. I didn't focus in there because we kind of know that Jesse was well. He was happy. Nothing was occurring. And that's that. So we get to Monday. And Monday during the day, they seem to have some off time. They could take this time to go exploring. And Jesse did that with a friend. This was pretty standard. Kids were just kind of expected to do this. And they're college kids. Don't forget, they're not in high school. They don't need a companion. These are adults, essentially. That night, which is Monday night, there was to be a conference closing dance from 10 p.m. until 2 a.m., which I think no one really, at least in Jesse's group, was really set to attend or desiring to attend this. And then at 2:30 a.m., there was to be a Model UN meeting. Now, if you were thinking what I'm thinking initially, you're like, 2:30 a.m., there's like a Model UN event going on. That seems highly inappropriate, right? What are you doing disrupting these kids in the middle of the night? Well, actually, multiple places state this, and I totally understand the idea behind it. They were really trying to simulate real-life political situations where it would be a middle-of-the-night call that comes up and you have to hop out of bed and get to a meeting or something in order to take care of or address real-world problems at that hour. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So there was a purpose to this, is really what I mean. And it wasn't just this student guise of let's all meet and have fun, like it was an actual event. So like I said, throughout the day he's exploring, he's going out with his friends. The dance is set to start at 10 p.m. And instead of going to the dance, everyone kind of stayed, or at least in Jesse's group, stayed at the hotel they were residing at, the Four Points. And it's alluded to in articles that they were likely just kind of partying in the room. Now, alcohol was prohibited, but if you've ever been in high school, you know that high school kids...
These are college kids, which is even worse.
High school kids, college kids are kind of going to eliminate that rule and do as they please. Often happens. And what I kind of assume happening is they're doing that for a while, and then they kind of get bored, and they're like, what's the next thing? So they're like, I wonder what's going on at the dance. So that's what they do. They leave the Four Points Hotel, and Jesse, my understanding, is seen on surveillance leaving his own hotel at around 12:40 a.m. He is carrying a bottle of some sort in the surveillance footage, and, you know, we know that he's leaving at that time. What we also know is that it's about a 15-minute walk from the Four Points to the Sheraton Chicago. However, we see him on surveillance at 1:09 a.m. approaching the Sheraton Chicago. So is it important? Is it not? I don't know, because we know Jesse went into the hotel, and I'll tell you the next events. But it's worth noting that instead of the average 15 minutes that it took for him to go to his own hotel to the conference hotel, it was roughly 30 minutes. So what happened in those additional 15 minutes? We don't know. Maybe it's not relevant. Maybe he dragged his feet. Maybe he stared off into the distance. I don't know. So when he gets there, they kind of stop by the dance, visit with people. I know that there were pictures taken. People have said, like, he seemed happy-go-lucky, maybe a little bit drunk. Now, reports go back and forth. Jesse either seemed drunk or somewhat under the influence, from he was stumbling or slurring to he didn't seem drunk at all. So I just want to make you aware of the different observations that people had of him. But either way, at some point kind of after the dance, they go to another hotel room, and they go to another room where I'm sure there's probably more drinking. That is kind of the assumption here. So Jesse does show up after that as scheduled at the Model UN meeting at 2:30 in the morning. Again, the reports are he was slurring, or it looked like he needed a little help walking, from he didn't look that inebriated to me. At about 2:50, he gets up and he says something to his friend, who his friend actually missed what he said. Either it was too loud, or I don't know, Jesse was whispering or something like that. But Jesse had said a couple of words to him before exiting. This friend had assumed maybe he needed to step out, go to the bathroom, get some fresh air, something like that. Jesse never came back to the meeting. So the Model UN meeting goes on until 5 a.m. or so, and Jesse never came back. So Ralph goes back to his room. He's stumbling around in the dark. He sees what looks like a body in the bed. He doesn't think anything of it. He wakes up around 10 the next morning and notices that is not the silhouette of a body, but it's all Jesse's clothes and stuff, like, scattered on his bed. It's very quickly that he kind of notes Jesse isn't here now, or he never came back. Maybe he just, like, slept it off in somebody else's room. But Jesse never returns. And they have to go soon. And they talk to the chaperone and everything. And I'll just basically cut to, they did all the right things and contacted who they needed to contact, because it was concerning. They had to leave, and Jesse didn't look like he came back to the room. No one had heard from him. His voicemail, his phone was going to voicemail. And, you know, thinking back, the last time anyone saw him was at 2:50 in the morning the night previous. Or should I say the morning previous? I know that you hate the middle of the night things, Melissa.
I do.
His parents were alerted. The chaperone spent another sleepless night staying in Chicago, walking the streets, looking in dumpsters, feeling absolutely awful about the whole thing. And the police were very quickly involved and started their investigation. They really started early on with trying to gain the surveillance footage. And they also started early on with making special note that the hotel is located very close to the Chicago River. Now, it's not an everyday thing that people are falling or trying to die by suicide or anything by jumping or falling into the river, but it's also not known as uncommon either. Now, the river is cold. The river is icy at this point, but they did several dives, several searches of the river, so much so that they pretty much by the end of their searches were very confident that he was not in the river. Now, my understanding is that the Chicago River does flow into Lake Michigan, And I actually caught part of this case listening to Trace Evidence. It was my first time listening to Trace Evidence. I loved it.
Yeah, he's great.
Amazing. Really recommend it. But he was really – what I really liked about what he does is he – I'm a visual person. So he describes things in detail for me in a way that I can visualize them. So he's describing Lake Michigan as not a lake. And I'm not that naive. I know the Great Lakes are huge. Like, it's not like you can go for a boat ride and see the other side. But he described Lake Michigan as the size of Ireland. And that was like, wow. And that's where the Chicago River flows into? That's huge. However, they do have some sort of like drainage or funneling system, for lack of better words. Sorry, I'm not educated in this. And they were pretty confident that if he had fallen or jumped in or something like that, that he wouldn't have gone into Lake Michigan. However, even if he had, I mean, there was still no indication, nothing ever found that would indicate that he popped up in Lake Michigan. So they've searched, they focused a lot of their investigation on the Chicago River. They don't necessarily believe that he's in there, but really no other evidence of his whereabouts pointed in any other direction. And that's kind of where the case has been stuck for all of these years. And we're nearing in on, I think it is 16 years since his disappearance. It'll be 16 years next month, I believe. And we are literally not any closer by any stretch of the imagination to knowing Jesse's whereabouts.
Well, I hate all of this.
And I mean, I don't know if this reminds you of kind of Brian Schaefer, but that's what I thought it would remind you of. Like,
yeah,
being on surveillance, being there, and then not being there.
Not.
And I will say, like, that piece that really reminds you of Brian Schaefer, which I didn't really mention, is that obviously we have surveillance footage of him going into the hotel, but we don't have any surveillance footage of him leaving the hotel.
Ugh.
Now, it's not to say that all entrances have great coverage, but the coverage they do have, there's no, you know, like, for example, where he came in, the same entrance he came in, there's no indication that he went out that same entrance. So, I will tell you the theories, and I found them to be a little bit surprising. Almost no one believes that this is suicide.
Well, I don't think it is either.
There's leaving his life. There is, did he fall into the Chicago River by accident? I will say, just because no one really believes it's suicide, I can't write that off right at the beginning. There is, did he jump into the Chicago River, or did he meet with some random foul play either in the hotel or after he left the hotel? Don't you start by asking me what I think, because I don't know.
I think something had to happen inside the hotel.
Okay. And why do you think that?
Because he's a pretty responsible kid, regardless of the drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's no evidence he left.
Mm-hmm.
Very like Brian Schaefer.
Right.
I think we have to end up in a place of something happened inside the four walls of that building.
And you know what slowed things down? I don't know if it would have made a difference, because they did end up talking to a lot of people that were there, is that by the time the investigation got serious, these kids had been bused home. And what happens when they're bused home in November? They go basically straight to Thanksgiving break. And in 2006, it's their social media, all of the things and stuff, but it's really not as prevalent as it is now. So they probably did take some time to track down all of the people that were associated with him and start talking about what they might have witnessed or observed.
Okay. Tell me when we saw him last.
So he left the meeting at 2:50 a.m. He whispered something to a friend. I don't know. It could have been, I'll be back in a second, or I'm going back to the hotel. Whatever. Police think it's a possibility that he could have left out of the back of the hotel, because there might have been like a stairwell down that way or something. which would put him very close to the river. One article states it would have put him within 25 feet of the river. And to my knowledge, there's no surveillance at the back entrance, so that is a possibility. But that would mean that he was either so inebriated that he stumbled 25 feet that way and into the river, or he could have intentionally done it, but I don't know.
Do we have any other options?
This same article, which I'll cite in my sources, it was a tremendous help, stated that, you know, he actually had been mugged the year before by a man with a knife on this same trip. He wasn't really disturbed by it, although obviously as parents, you're disturbed by that. So that is another option. Did he attempt to walk back to his hotel room? And did something happen on his way back?
Sure. It's equally plausible.
Now, do you think that that's more plausible than falling and stumbling into the river and not being discovered if you did?
Yes. Yes, I do. I don't think he's in the river.
You don't think he's in the river?
No, I think this is foul play. Now, ask me any more than that.
Do you have a feeling or do you have, like, do you feel like you understand his mindset?
No. No, I just think that he left that room with intentions of coming back or going back to his hotel.
Right.
But I do not think that he left that room planning on disappearing or jumping in a river or anything crazy.
Now, one interesting point that, I'm sorry, I forget the host's name or I didn't catch it, of Trace Evidence. Do you know?
Steve Pachenko.
Okay, yes. He made an interesting point that I hadn't read in any articles, and he was like, I wonder if he smoked. Because if you smoke and you wanted to leave the meeting for a brief moment or something, would you have just tried to go down the steps and go outside or something like that instead of go all the way through the hotel through the front entrance to accomplish the same thing? And did something happen when he, you know, left out the back door? Did he get locked out? Like, you know, when hotel doors close behind you and they lock you out?
Yeah, but he would have just walked around and come back in.
He could have, or could have foul play have occurred then? Or could he have said, oh, I'm locked out, I'm just going to head back to the hotel?
Okay, well, if we're thinking, okay, so let's say he did that. And it's either foul play there, and I'm assuming there's no footage of him arriving back at his hotel.
Correct.
And there's no footage of him walking.
Correct, which there are, I believe, kind of a good amount of cameras in the area.
So I'm more likely to believe something happened to him inside that hotel.
In the hotel?
Yeah.
So, okay, actually that brings about kind of a third theory. What if he went to a room and there's no indication that he did drugs or anything like that, but he either drank enough to scare some people and passed out or stopped breathing or something like that. We hear all the time in hazing, right? Or...
yeah, then you got a bunch of college kids trying to hide a body.
Could he have tried something and had an overdose and everyone got scared? But then we go to Melissa's favorite, which is kind of a I Know What You Did Last Summer, which we've proven that can happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say that. I still don't love the fact that a bunch of college kids would hide a body.
Seriously. And 16 years later, they haven't peeped a word about it. But we know it happens.
Oh my gosh. Amy, I hate you for this. This is why these cases make me crazy. Like, he was just at a UN meeting and then poof, right. Gone.
I feel like we can confidently say he didn't walk out the front of the hotel where he came in. Surveillance would have caught him. So he's either in the hotel or went out a different entrance. So we've exhausted a scenario, what could happen if he was in a hotel, in the hotel, right? Like maybe he left the conference, this is boring, let me go back to the party that was fun, and something happened there. Then you're left with how do college students dispose of a body? Or the other scenario is he walks out like the back door of the hotel, and what? He either starts walking towards his hotel and it's like a random foul play like what happened the year before, or he really does slip and fall in the river?
Okay. So I want to rule out the river. I don't think that that's
You really want to rule out the river, and it's because you really think they would have discovered him?
Yeah, they knew fast enough. You know, it's not like they didn't know for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I have to land on foul play.
Okay.
But I have no idea how I get there. I don't know if it was in the hotel. I don't know if he went out a back door and it was random. I don't know if he went to a party and got drunk or high. I just have to say, I don't think it...
There's actually one other theory that I think is kind of ridiculous. I totally forgot about it. I actually did not write it down in my notes. Someone thought that he could have left with the flyers of his friend's band and started, like, leaving them around, like, posting them, which people quickly kind of wrote off. They were like, really? Like, you're going to start hanging flyers, at, like, 3 a.m. in the middle of the night? Like, why would you do that?
So now I'm on the Reddit.
Oh, you are? Oh, no.
No one has anything.
Chicago is a violent city, and I know downtown is probably maybe a little less violent than other areas, but it is not implausible to think that there would be violence in the middle of the night with a vulnerable young man alone.
He was robbed the last time.
Right. Agreed. But I guess, like, I see most random foul play things, like, if the purpose was to mug someone is to take their money, beat them up, and leave them there. Or, worst case scenario, if they were going to kill him, to shoot him and leave him there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what makes the foul play thing in regards to, like, a robbery hard for me to wrap my head around, because if you're randomly killing people, there's not a lot to link you to that anyway. It actually seems more high risk for you to link yourself to that crime by picking up the body and trying to dispose of it.
Well, right. And this is a Reddit thread, and it's like, let me go back. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to read you an actual quote from this Reddit thread, and I mean, we can source it if you want to. But the participants in the model conference, the most obvious suspects. But how do you dispose of a body in a strange city if you've never committed a murder before?
Right. Right.
Which is a valid point. This very much is Brian Schaefer.
Right. Right.
And I hate it.
I don't know. I would think something could have happened in a room, but that's where I get stuck is, how would all these students know what to do?
But wouldn't there be evidence of him going into a room?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a hotel has to have security cameras.
There's nothing that I read about that.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, wouldn't a hotel have interior cameras? Like, don't we know where he went in the hotel?
Not to my knowledge. There's nothing in the articles that I read.
Well, I hate this. This article I'm looking at, or website, it's findjessieross.com. His mom wrote, aliens took him away.
Yes, I saw that one.
Knowing full well how ridiculous it sounds, but it's no more ridiculous than any other theories offered.
She is.
And she's right.
Absolutely. But I don't think he intentionally meant to disappear. I don't think he died by suicide either.
Okay, so what do you think?
I guess I'm inclined to think, if I can't wrap my head around something happening in the room with other students, because I just can't believe that they would have successfully been able to dispose of a body, that he left through the back door. Why? I don't know. But that leaves slipping and falling into the river.
Which I don't think happened.
But that seems as unlikely as foul play, that someone's going to try and steal his money. Then they're going to collect him and then dispose of him. I don't think he jumped into the river. I think if anything did happen in the river, he fell. And he probably was more likely to succumb to the elements after that or whatever than anything else. I forget if it was an article or if it was what I listened to from Trace Evidence. I apologize. But, you know, they've talked about, like, a lot of abandoned buildings in Chicago and it being possible that he ended up in one of them. Did he go to, like, a late night rave or something like that? Which I don't think. I don't think that he did. But could he have died there? It would have actually been more plausible that police didn't find someone, because there are so many abandoned buildings in Chicago. However, in 16 years, no one's come across someone's body? I know, I just keep making this worse and worse and worse.
You really do. And, like, the Reddit is not helping at all.
I think, like, for the first time in a little while, I'm on I don't land. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't land at all.
All of these seem absolutely terrible and unfitting.
Do you want to open it up?
Yes.
Because I have nothing.
I know. I have nothing either. So I guess tell us what you think, guys, because I'm pretty lost, and I think I've been it's been a long time since I've been speechless.
Yeah, please tell us what you think. Tell us your thoughts, your theories, and if we missed something or anything, because this one is rough.
Seriously.
All right, and we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right, thanks. Bye. For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.